Good morning, everyone, and happy Christmas Eve. I am having minor technical difficulties here at my house right now, which I think I can resolve in about 2 minutes. What I'm going to do is play the opening song and ask you all to greet one another on the board while I run and try and take care of these technical difficulties so that we can have a wonderful weekly gathering. So let me start the morning song where you can greet one another, and then I will be right back. Hopefully it won't cut in and out too much while I'm playing the weekly song, the opening song. But here we go.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love. We are awakening to long forgotten memory. Dawn is breaking, waves are coming in. Everybody here, standing in wonder beneath the rain and the thunder, rising in love. Satchitananda, Om Shanti, Om Shanti, Satchitananda.
So again, good morning, everyone, and happy Christmas Eve. Today's gathering is based on the following statement of purpose, which is our first core value. We trust everyone is led by unique inner guidance to one experience called awakening, which is realization of one true self. We live this value by supporting one another on different paths of awakening. And before we get into the devotional part of our service today, I would like to share some announcements. The first is that we are now officially into our holiday hours, since today is Christmas Eve. Today we will close after the 30-minute fellowship time that follows our weekly gathering. That fellowship time is led by Reverends Ken and Rebecca Gibson. We will be closed for the remainder of the day today, and we will also be closed tomorrow, Christmas Day. However, we will reopen at our regular time on Tuesday, December 26th, which is 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, next weekend is another holiday weekend. On December 31st, which is New Year's Eve, we will open the sanctuary Sunday morning at our regular time, which is 9:15 a.m. Eastern Time. And we will remain open throughout the day for our regular programming until 6 p.m. Eastern Time, which is right after the Mighty Companions. We will close at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will remain closed for the rest of New Year's Eve and also for all of New Year's Day. But again, we will reopen at our regular time on Tuesday, January 2nd, which is 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I'd also like to let you know about some classes that are currently open for registration. One of those classes is Introduction to Buddhism. One of the strengths of Buddhism is its practices. And according to Thich Nhat Hanh, awareness of being is the backbone of the Buddhist method. In fact, Thich Nhat Hanh says that awareness of being is a discipline that helps man to realize himself. And so in our Introduction to Buddhism class, we will discern the simple Buddhist practices that are useful in bringing about more awareness of being. We will also discern universal wisdom that is helpful when it is held in universal consciousness. We will discern what we could call acting or living in the world that is an outward extension of inner practice. And we'll also get a very authentic sense of right and wrong without guilt, or we might call it wholesome or not wholesome. As NTI says, everything is permissible, but not everything is beneficial. So how do we get that sense of what is and is not beneficial for us on the spiritual path without any guilt? Homework for this class begins this coming Friday, December 29th, and registration closes on December 27th. So we encourage you to register right away. It is a 6-week class. The cost is $120. The class will meet on Thursday evenings from January 4th to February 9th from 7:30 to 9:30 Eastern Time, which is 4:30 to 6:30 Pacific. And it will be facilitated by Reverend Carrie Christensen. The second class that is open for registration right now is Soul Collage as an Awakening Tool. Class, it encourages participants to access their inner wisdom using a tactile creative process as they move through the spiritual purification journey. It's a creative process of making collaged cards that facilitate a dialogue with your inner guidance. The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer will be used as the text for this class. It will be read and contemplated. And then intuitively, participants will select soul-stirring images from magazines that reflect the insights that are gained through reading and contemplating The Untethered Soul. This class will happen in Zoom since it needs to be visual. And it will be taught by Reverend Doreen Bonnet. It will be held on Wednesday evenings from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, starting on January 17th. There's a sliding scale of pricing for this class so that you can pay what you feel guided to pay. And 50% of what you pay will go directly to Awakening Together to benefit our operational budget. I also want to tell you about an upcoming gentle healing class. Many of you are in gentle healing, and you know that we are about to end year one and begin year two. However, year one is also beginning again. So if there is anyone who did not take year one of gentle healing and you would like to, you'll have the opportunity. If you know someone who might want to, you can let them know about this opportunity. Or if there's someone who started year one but either didn't finish or they feel like they didn't really apply themselves, you can go through year one again. Year one, Gentle Healing, will be led by Reverend Rebecca Gibson. It will be using the same curriculum that we used in year one on Tuesday nights. This year one will begin this year on Tuesday, January 23rd, and it will be each Tuesday throughout the year at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. That's 6 a.m. Pacific Time. Although the sanctuary is typically closed that time of day on Tuesdays, the sanctuary will open for Gentle Healing Year One. It will close immediately afterwards. Also, this will be broadcast over the radio. Another option, of course, is for those of you who are through year two, if you would just like to listen in year one and get a simultaneous review, you could do that as well without actually fully participating in year one. And that information will continually be communicated between now and January 23rd, and at some point there'll also be a message coming out on our daily update, but no registration is required for Gentle Healing. You just show up and participate fully, if possible. What I'd like to do now is begin the inspirational part of our service. Since today is Christmas Eve, all of my songs today will be Christmas songs, but they were carefully selected to be closely aligned with our theme today, which is about following inner guidance. The first song is by Becky Kelly, and the name of the song, it's kind of a fun song actually, the name of the song is Where's the Line to See Jesus?
Christmas time was approaching, snow was starting to fall, shoppers choosing their presents, people filling the mall, children waiting for Santa with excitement and glee. Little boy tucked my sweater, looked up and asked me, where's the line to see Jesus? Is he here at the store? It's Christmas time, it's his birthday, why don't we see him more?
Today we're going to be looking at how to find that inner line to see Jesus, which would also be that inner intuition that guides to awakening. First, I have another announcement to make. Early this Christmas Eve, another star joined the light of all of the stars in our heavens. Early this morning, Jack Poole passed away. Some of you may not know him, but he's Jacqueline's father, and I know that you all know Jacqueline. And in fact, this is one leading the service this morning. Typically, this would be Jacqueline's Sunday to lead the service. But of course, when it was seen that this was coming, Jacqueline realized it might be a good time for her to step back. So what I would like to do this morning is begin our invocation with a moment of silence and gratitude for Jack Poole, who is not only a physical father, but a spiritual teacher, who raised several wonderful daughters. He gave up after his last daughter. I think he maybe wanted a son. And when the daughters kept coming, finally, he named the last daughter after him. That's where Jacqueline got her name. So she's the youngest and the one named after the father. There was later another daughter as well, much later. But he raised several wonderful daughters by passing on all of his spiritual wisdom and spiritual intuition. It was a great gift. And so let's begin with silence for Jack, and then I'll move into the invocation as it comes. So this morning, I open this prayer with gratitude for the light of heaven, light which burns and shines in each and every one of us, whether there seems to be physical form or not. It is the light that cannot be put out. It is the light that we are here to awaken to. It's why we're looking for that inner line to Jesus or Ramana or Buddha or whatever we may call the deity that inspires us the most. It's ourself that we are awakening to. That one light that shines so bright that a trillion suns could not begin to capture the eternal light that is what we are. And so on this Christmas Eve, which is known for the bright light of the North Star, we have gratitude for the light, the eternal light, and we humbly ask that each of us may be guided to find it fully. Amen. And so with that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Nancy Sullivan, who is going to share our reading today, which is from the teachings of Inner Ramana. It is the message called The Purpose of Surrender, Part 2. So Nancy, the mic is yours. And Nancy, I'm hoping that you heard me. If you thought you had the mic, you didn't. I'm turning the mic over to you again. All right, I wonder if Nancy is having some kind of technical difficulties because I see that she is in the sanctuary. Oh, that's okay, Nancy. So what I will do, Nancy, I'll just read on your behalf. So this is Regina substituting for Nancy. The Purpose of Surrender, Part 2. The mind creates experience that is not real. It is illusion or fantasy. And it is created for the purpose of enjoyment or pleasure. But when the mind forgets reality and sees the unreal as real, fear is a necessary component. The mind is afraid because the unnatural is not natural. The mind that has forgotten reality knows that something is wrong, but it does not know what that is. It projects stories in an effort to give itself a reason for its fear that it cannot find the answer it seeks because it's looking in the wrong direction. Its fear does not come from its own projections, and so solutions to those projections cannot end the fear. Fear comes simply from not knowing reality. Therefore, the only answer to fear is to let go of what is false and to remember reality as true. Discarding the world is as simple as remembering that it isn't true. This is as simple as living from within instead of from without. One who is forgetting the world takes his cues from within. When observed, he may seem to respond to without. He may even seem to respond to his thoughts, which are still without. But this is only if you observe him from without. Without, we'll see without. Within, we'll see within. One who is awakening to truth is also discarding the world, which includes discarding his thoughts about the world. So this one is learning to take all of his cues from within, from beyond the clouds of his thoughts. True perception is a bridge. Guidance is a bridge. To feel that one is awakened or living outside of mind when one is experiencing perception or guidance is an error. To say that one lives outside of mind when one experiences perception is to remain deluded. But to listen to guidance and to say that one is guided by mind outside of mind is not to be deluded. It is merely to describe the experience in words. It is merely to recognize that mind is needed to experience perception. The guidance is the echo of knowledge filtered through mind. One who listens to guidance may be said by others to be awakened, but this one will only say he is realized, because he realizes truth even as he experiences perception. He listens to knowledge because he knows that one who sees perception cannot truly see, but one who is not attached can be guided. Non-attachment and realization are one. Seeing truth is to be awakened. World-focused thought is always an error. It is attachment. Therefore, it is dreaming or remaining deluded. To help people with world-focused thoughts by providing world-focused solutions is assisting one to dream. Therefore, the awakened one, who has accepted the role of continuing the awakening, will not assist in world-focused concerns by providing world-focused answers. The awakened one will assist world-focus by observing the filter with the one who has a desire to awaken. When one is not world-focused, guidance within the world occurs naturally. Non-attached activity within perception is not a hindrance to awakening. Attached activity is a means of clinging dream. And that's the end of that particular message. Many of you know, if not all of you, that recently committed time in solitude and more meditation every day. And I had my first day of solitude, which of course no interaction with any other persons in any way, no internet, no telephone, solitude. I had my first day of solitude in sometime in mid-November. And in the late afternoon of that day, I began to feel a guidance to read a book. And it's funny because I have not actually read a book in a long time. You know, well, I guess I read one about enlightenment intensives, but you know, reading a book as, you know, in the way that I used to read books when I first started the spiritual path. I used to read one book and then another book and then another book. You know, that reading has fallen away, right? It's not really a part of what I do for my own awakening anymore. So when I was guided to read a book, I had no idea what book to read. And the question I asked was, who can I trust? And I was guided to Bernadette Roberts. And in fact, two of her books, I think there may be others, but there are two in particular I have been guided to, which I am reading kind of back and like some sections from one book and then some sections from the other book. Like I'm not reading them necessarily through from beginning to end, just following guidance with the reading. But the two books I am reading, one is her most famous book, which is in like a story form, and it's called The Experience of No Self. And then the other one is more like a textbook, and it's called What is the Self? And so it's these two books that I am reading together. And today, what I would like to do is I would like to share with you some portions of The Experience of No Self. A perfect fit with this message that I read this morning from the teachings of Inner Ramana, and really gives like a deeper look at what this message is referring to. So again, I'm reading from The Experience of No Self by Bernadette Roberts, And I am beginning at the very bottom of page 76 in that book. And I just want to say that at this point, she has gone through many, many shifts, or what some people would call many, many awakenings. So when she begins speaking here, she's going to say the key discovery. This key discovery is a key discovery that was made after a particular shift that was pretty advanced. So she's speaking from a very awakened mind, although there still may have been another shift or two that followed this. But with that said, let me begin reading. She says, the key discovery is what I call doing, which seems to take the place of willing, or that energy we once experienced as life and being. Doing is an energyless, non-reflective, effortless activity that must be distinguished from a deliberate, self-aware type of activity that needs constant effort and maintenance. Or if I just put that book down for a moment and pick up the teachings of Inner Ramana, what she's really describing is this paragraph from page 10. One who is forgetting the world takes his cues from within. When observed, he may seem to respond to without. He may even seem to respond to his thoughts, which are still without. But this is only if you observe him from without. Without will see without. Within will see within. So this movement that she's calling doing, that's her own word, doing, she says it's very different than that deliberate, self-aware type of activity. Like, you know, if I decide, oh, you know, I don't like this, I need to take this action in order to make sure that doesn't happen, right? That would be the deliberate, self-aware. I'm aware of myself. I don't like that, right? So I need to take this action. That would be the deliberate, self-aware type of activity. And she says, and she also says that needs constant effort and maintenance, which the constant effort and maintenance, as you know, is the thinking about me all the time that goes on in the mind. She says that is very different from what she is calling doing, right? She says this doing takes the place of that deliberate self-effort. Once that deliberate self-effort has died or is at least weakening, she continues, the term effortless here refers to the fact that no self energies are involved, even though physically we may still work up a sweat. Right? So this master, I'll use the word master, this master could appear to have an extremely busy life from dawn to bedtime. Right? Effortless in that none of it is coming from me, what I want, what I think, how I feel things should be. Right? Now we're going to look for this line to Jesus, as the song said. Learning to distinguish doing from past methods of activity is much like the conditioning process every child is taught by its parents. And the way I really understand that is it's like that, but in the reverse. You know, like a child is taught how to think and judge and decide and do. It's a conditioning process. Well, this now is the opposite. It's learning how not to think and decide and judge before doing, right? So it's like the reverse of what the child goes through. But in a way, it's like a new learning, because we learned in the world how to think and decide and judge and do. And now it's a reverse conditioning. And so it appears to take time to learn how to find this line to Jesus, because we're so engrossed in self-will. And the only way we know how to be and do is with the mind, what the mind says, I want and don't want, should be and should not be, etc. So learning to distinguish doing from past methods of activity is much like the conditioning process every child is taught by its parents. In this case, because again, this is the reverse process, in this case, any attempt in self-invested activity results in emptiness because there is nothing there. Whereas the activity in which there is no self-investment or self-awareness, something is there. This activity is not empty, and it's what I call doing. And what she's attempting to describe here is something that I recognize because it's what I call motivation. It's not the motivation that comes from the I thought. It's that when you are surrendered to something beyond yourself, if that something is not ready for or does not want you to do a particular thing, and you're really following the energy of that instead of self-will, then even if the idea occurs, oh, I should do this, you can find no motivation to do it. You know, the motivation used to come from the mind. It used to come from self-will. But when self-will has been abandoned or has been abandoned to a certain degree, and there's another motivation that you're following, right, the other motivation is what carries you. And so even if the mind says, oh, I should go do this now, since you're not being carried by self-will anymore, when you look to go do it, you can't find any motivation. She says there's nothing there, but I call that motivation. And if it is something you are to do, even if the mind is saying, oh, I don't want to do that, there's all this motivation to do it, right? Or she says there's something there. In fact, let me go ahead and continue what she says here. The reason for using this term, and she's referring to the term doing, the reason for using this term is because the doer, as well as that which the doer acts upon, falls into the realm of the unknown. Only the act of doing falls into the realm of known. Describing a process that is, you know, pretty awake. And the self-will has, and the self, the ego self has really disappeared for her at this point. And so she's saying there isn't a doer, the doer being the one that would say, oh, I want to get this email out. There is no doer. You know, there's just the doing, right? For those of you who have taken the Kabbalah class, it's much like, you know, there is no creation, there's just creationing, right? It's the same thing. She says there is no doer, there's just doing. So let me review a little bit and then continue forward. She says, any attempt in self-invested activity results in emptiness because there is nothing there. Whereas with activity in which there is no self-investment or self-awareness, something is there. This activity is not empty and is what I call doing. The reason for using this term is because the doer, as well as that which the doer acts upon, falls into the realm of the unknown. Only the act of doing falls into the realm of the known. This means that what is can only be known because it's identical with its acts or doing. And that reminded me that Jesus said, and so I went and looked that up, and I'm going to read this to you. This is from the Bible, from the book of John. It's in chapter 10, 39. So Jesus is, you know, talking, and he's being accused of blasphemy because he's a mere man claiming to be God. That's what they're saying to him. And Jesus answered them, is it not written in your law, I have said you are gods? If he called them gods to whom the word of God came, and scripture cannot be set aside, he's talking to you know, some teachers of the law. You can't ignore the scripture. The scripture says you're all gods, right? Then what about the one whom the Father set apart as his very own and sent into the world? And of course, Jesus here is not talking about his body, although they misunderstood that. Right? He's talking about that part of us that would be called the Son of God. What about the one whom the Father set apart as his very own and sent into the world? Why then do you accuse me of blasphemy because I said I am God's Son? Do not believe me unless I do the works of my Father. But if I do them, even though you do not believe me, believe the works, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I in the Father. So she is saying that in this world of perception, the truth, or that which we may call God, is a complete mystery. But the evidence of that can be seen in the doing of one who follows inner intuition. It's kind of like, you know, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree, right? You know, a good fruit comes from a good tree. She continues, initially, the process of learning the difference between doing and self-activity may be compared to balancing on a walking beam. And I think this is a perfect description because, you know, we have to, when we first begin, at least I think almost all of us, when we first begin, self-will is still very present. And we're trying to learn how to find and follow that line to Jesus or that line to awakening, which is very different from self-will, which is what we were trained to know and follow. And so it can be very, very tricky in the beginning, especially if self-will is still quite strong, very, very tricky to find the difference between my self-will, which I'm extremely accustomed to, and this unknown something else, which Jesus called the Father, and which I call inner intuition. So initially, the process of learning the difference between doing and self-activity may be compared to balancing on a walking beam, where doing means having your foot squarely on target, so there is something underfoot, and non-doing or self-invested activity finds no foothold because there is nothing underfoot. And in the beginning, it might not feel that way because if you're so used to the illusory balloon of self-will, I'll call it that, the illusory balloon of self-will, it may feel like there is something there. But as that balloon begins to be let out of that balloon, right, then it becomes less and less and less, and therefore the solidness of the guidance that comes from beyond self-will, it feels more and more solid. It's actually quite subtle compared to a balloon of self-will, but it's real and lasting, where the balloon is just a bunch of hot air. So as the hot air begins to escape from the balloon because we're letting go of self-will, the solidness of the subtle inner intuition becomes stronger and more clear. And this is what we have to learn to feel the difference between, that balloon of hot air that is self-will and this more subtle, often called the still quiet voice, right? But this more subtle, very solid, very clear line to Jesus. So initially, the process of learning the difference between doing and talking being, where doing means having your foot squarely on target, so there is something underfoot, non-doing or self-invested activity finds no foothold because there is nothing underfoot. At first, making your way along this beam is by trial and error. And that I have found to be incredibly true. What I've also found is that the ego can get people to not even try by making them afraid of making a mistake. Like, how do you know that's intuition? What if you're wrong? You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't send that message, right? Yeah, maybe, maybe some of us, if we ever tried to learn balance beam, maybe we never really tried some tricks on the balance beam because we were afraid of falling off the beam. And of course, try, you never learn. Any gymnast that finally became a gold medalist in the balance beam, certain fell off the beam thousands upon times. How she learned that enabled her to stay on the beam, and when. So we have to be with mistakes in order to learn, from those mistakes, so we can get a feel different between our balloon of self-will and this subtle, quiet energy, which comes from the what she calls the unknown. We might say God or Holy Spirit or Jesus, but that's our mental projection onto this unknown. At first, making your way along this beam is by trial and error, but eventually, walking the beam becomes second nature, or rather, you discover in time that walking this beam is your real nature, the way that you walk for the rest of your life. In this way, you can feel the balance beam, right? You know you are on beam and are living and doing as you are supposed to be doing. But when there is a void underfoot, you step off the beam and there's nothing there. And there is a void underfoot, then you are not on beam and there is no. And which is vested active is the state of absolutely nothing, or I called it a balloon full of hot air, right? Where once on this journey the emphasis had been a selfless existence, this existence was gradually seen to be empty, no longer of any use. But when, and by selfless, what she means here is I am doing for others, but there's still an I there. Right? I am doing for others. I am serving in the soup kitchen. I am, whatever. She says the selfless existence, it's moving in the right direction when the I is doing for others. But actually, there's still an I there. So living on intuition is beyond selflessness. It's no self as opposed to selflessness, right? So where once on this journey the emphasis had been on a selfless existence, this existence was gradually seen to be empty and void and no longer of any use. But when this selfless existence disappears completely, what remains is doing, which is like a being, a guide, and is the something that is what is, right? When on being, now, this is a very interesting statement, by the way, which she's about to make. And at first, if you just look at the words, it may throw some of you for a loop. But when you really could really listen to what she's saying, it makes perfect sense. When on beam, we are no longer free to come and go, because only the false self enjoys such freedoms. A choiceless state knows nothing of those usual reference of freedom. So it's the false self that thinks, do I want to do this or do I not want to do this, right? But the one who has let go of that false self has no such to or not want to. Yeah, non-referential. It just does. It's just the doing. It just follows the being. It's like a train. It just stays on track. She says the free one is now gone. and that which remains now walks the beam. I love this description. Listen to this. That which remains now walks the beam like an unthinking tree must grow and function in a already nature. You see, all of that self-will is completely gone, and now you just follow the intelligence of the universe like a tree, right? Thus, knowing what to do or where to put your foot is fairly black and white. What is to be known is simply there, and what is not known is not there. In other words, what to do is built into the being itself. What once created the division between doing and its content was the false self, with all its choices, values, judgments, ideas, and all the rest, which never gets on the beam and can't find it because it is blocked by all of these so-called freedoms. I'll read that sentence again. What once created the division between doing and its content, in other words, what kept you from being able to find the inner intuition, which she's calling the beam, what once created the division between doing and its content was the false self, with all of its choices, values, judgments, ideas, and all the rest, which never gets on the beam and can't find it because it is blocked by all its so-called freedoms. So that means that it's a bit of a cop-out if we say, well, you know, I know I hurt a lot of people when I did that, but, you know, I have no control over my own behavior because, you know, this is just a script. She said, no, when you are in that self-will, you can't even find this being. It kind of reminds me of NTI near the end of Acts. NTI does refer to a script, but it says in effect that there are two scripts. There's the ego script, which is just kind of round and round and round regurgitation of ego thoughts and beliefs. And then there's the spirit's script. And if you follow spirit's script, it leads to a slit in the script where you exit the script entirely. Right? So it may be true to some degree that when we're acting from ego, I mean, it is, we're acting from ego, we are acting unconsciously from an ego script. But it's not true that we can't reflect on that, notice that, learn from that, let go of false beliefs, and start looking for this other inner script, one that leads to the slit in the script, right? So she says that all of this thinking that we know what to do and making choices, you know, when we're in that self-will, that balloon of self-will, we can't even find this being, right? We can't even find it, so we can't claim to be on it. She says, however, not knowing what to do, what to think, what to say, how to live. Oh, no, sorry, I'm misreading her here. She's still talking about when you think you are making decisions. When you think, oh, you know, I don't know, should I do this? Well, if I just don't, such and this happen. However, the good side is, right, when you're in all of that thinking and thinking you have choices, that kind of not knowing, that not knowing what to do, what to think, what to say, how to live, is a state of perpetual confusion. Thinking you have decisions, that's a perpetual confusion. She says, on the being, what is moves in one sure, unknowable direction. So it's interesting. There's still an unknowing there because she calls the direction unknowable. It's an unknowable direction, but there's a surety to it. There's a certainty to it. All of that thinking is not there. In fact, like she said earlier, oh, something, it shows up. It doesn't show up. You know, so it means that you would need to, because you won't need to know the thing you ordered, right? It is provided in the moment that you need it. And so there's always a knowing in the moment that is very certain, even though on a broader aspect, it's a greater comfort with unknowing. This being, what is, moves in one sure and unknowable direction, so that knowing and doing are the same. Nevertheless, this knowing is most unusual because it is not derived from a thinking, speculating, reflecting mind. Or again, if we go back to the teachings of Inner Ramana, it said that one who is forgetting the world takes his cues from within. When observed, he may seem to respond to without. He may even seem to respond to his thoughts, which are still without. But this is only if you observe him from without. Without will see without, and within will see within. Right? She says that when you are on the being, you are totally at one with what is. Let's see. I'm noticing the time, a little bit of time here. So let me see what else I would like to share. All right. She talks about, and this is over on page 34, she talks about the thought that still exists when you're on the beam, and how it's different from the thought when you're off the beam. So this is something else that can really help us get a feel for the beam. So let me share with you what she says about thinking. Once the mind is patterned and conditioned or brought to its full potential as a functioning mechanism, and what she means by that, again, I've skipped some reading, but like you've learned things like how to drive a car, your language, you know, how to eat, right? You know the things that the human brain is conditioned to do things so that the body can move in a reasonable way in this world, right? So she says, once the mind is patterned and conditioned or brought to its full potential as a functioning mechanism, thinking can go right on without any need for a self-conscious mechanism. So in other words, you can read a recipe and think, do I have salt? You know, and grab the salt and cook without all the me thinking in between. It's like the practical thinking can remain, but the me thinking about me, can go away. It's not needed. Once the mind is patterned and conditioned or brought to its full potential as a functioning mechanism, thinking can go right on without any need for a self-conscious mechanism. At the same time, however, it will be a different kind of thinking, where before thought had been a product of reflecting, introspection, objectifying mechanism. Again, that's talking about thinking about me all the time. Even colored with personal feelings and biases. Oh, ever colored. Okay. Ever colored with personal feelings and biases. Now whatever is to be known is spontaneously there. The known arises in the now moment, which is solely concerned with the immediate present, thus making it invariably practical. So, I need salt for this recipe. Do I still have salt? You know, very now, rather than, oh my God, I'm such a loser. I should have remembered when I went to the store yesterday that I needed to buy salt. How come I never am able to remember everything I need? And I should make a list. I always know I should make a list, but I never make a list. I am, you know, when am I going to learn, right? A difference in the thinking. Just where is the salt? Do I need salt? And all of that me thought. What this means is that thought goes right on even when there is no self, no thinker, and no self-consciousness. In fact, she says one way to look at this spiritual journey is to see it as a process of acclimating to an unself-conscious mind. And that's exactly what the teachings of Inner Ramana is all about. The teachings of Inner Ramana is learning how to live in the world without thinking about the self all the time. That's why it uses the tools of surrender, the mantra, and self-inquiry. And that's what she says the spiritual path is really about. It's moving away from self-will, or the Course would call it moving away from the ego thought system to the Holy Spirit thought system. Right? It's moving away from self-will to that in-the-moment knowing that comes from the unknown. That still, quiet voice. That subtle, subtle something that is not the hot air balloon of self-will. She says, ordinarily, it never occurs to the mind how completely subjective it is, or how automatically and unconsciously every thought, word, and deed is filtered through a self-conscious mechanism. So most people do not think about how much they think about themselves. That's what she's saying here. And never to most people to think about how much they think about themselves. And then I love this. She says, it may be helpful to draw a comparison between man's basic mental structure, and this is referring to the ego thought system, and that of a dry sponge. A dry sponge is light and airy and can easily be carried by the breezes that come its way. But if we take that sponge and saturate it with the waters of selfhood, it becomes heavy, ponderous, and bloated, and it can no longer respond to the breezes. She says it virtually goes nowhere. So again, all of that self activity is like going round and round in a hamster's wheel. The ego script is like round and round in a hamster's wheel, but it doesn't go in a straight line, right? So when the sponge is saturated with the waters of selfhood, it becomes heavy, ponderous, and bloated, because it cannot respond to the breezes, and it cannot respond to the breezes, so it virtually goes nowhere. If, however, the sponge can stay away from these waters, which of course is thinking, and no longer allow itself to be used, no longer do what the ego says to do. Remember from the Revolver? I say, you do! Remember that, the ego? I say, you do. Well, she says if the sponge can stay away from these waters and no longer allow itself to be used, it will eventually, by sitting alone and aloof, dry out and return to its original structure, which was the sponge that was light and airy and could easily be blown by the wind. If we could fully realize how every cell of is the waters of self continually oozing outward, and then she has in parentheses projecting and seeping inward, that's the thoughts returning for us to believe again, we might have some idea of what it would be like if all of these movements came to an end. Imagine the still point, the silence of all of the projection and ego thinking dying away. She said, from here on, when all of these movements come to an end, each small event becomes totally of the moment. It is out of the question, since we can no longer endow any object with its usual values, meanings, and purposes. And I love this sentence, and this is how I'll end. She says, we must wait in emptiness for the breezes that will carry us along, right? The empty sponge has to just wait in emptiness for the breezes that blow it along its way. And if you've read in the Bible at John chapter 3, this is exactly how Jesus describes his experience to Nicodemus, right? He says, when you awaken to the Spirit, right, you are moved by the wind, right? So that's what I want to share with you. There's one more comment here. She does say, in this way, the mind is always clear, but it's not empty of thought per se. It's only clear of that which clouded and infected the mind with the waters of self. So that's what I wanted to share with you today, because, you know, we're coming into a new year, And a new year is always that traditional time of New Year's resolutions. And it's just a wonderful time for us to, you know, become even more willing, because I'm sure that we were all willing before, but to become even more willing to find that balance beam of spiritual intuition instead of continuing to go round and round in the hamster's wheel with that full hot air balloon of selfhood. And so now what I will do is play another Christmas song, which again, this Christmas song is linked to our message today, because it's about finding the star and following the star, right? The name of the song is Christmas Star. And as I'm playing along, you know, please contemplate today's message. Also, if you feel to make a donation to Awakening Together at this year-end time, Kim will provide that link to make it easy for you to do so. So this is Christmas Star. So now we come to that time in our weekly service when you all are invited to share based on your experience with the reading or the message, or based on your contemplation. So if there's someone who would like to share, will you please put your hand up and share? A new star in heaven shines bright. Yeah, when I heard the song just now, I must confess. Oops, sounds like another song is beginning. Hold on. That wasn't intentional. When I heard that song just now, I must confess that I heard that song through two mental interpretations. One was the mental interpretation of the message, but the other was related to Jack. You know, and it is, you know, Jack passed this morning, which is early, early Christmas Eve. And, you know, the song was all about, you know, starlight, star bright, lead me home for Christmas. I just, you know, I heard that too. And, yeah. All right, is there anyone who would like to share? All right, so since no one is putting up their hand, what I will do is take us into our closing song. Again, another holiday song selected to go along with today's message. But I want to wish everyone a very happy Christmas Eve, a very Merry Christmas. And to Jacqueline and Connie and Marge and their entire family, deep, deep, deep love, right? Deep, deep, deep love. It's what I wish for y'all. So this last song is called Gloria, and it's written by Jason Gray. And this song is his imagination of the experience of the shepherds who, you know, they were out tending their flocks on Christmas Eve. And then this angel came to them, this bright light, to tell them about the Savior that had been born. And then the bright light, you know, kind of went away. And that kind of sets up the song. So this is the song Gloria, the Song of the Shepherds by Jason Gray. While ago it played when I didn't want it to. Now I'm having trouble getting it to play when I want it to. Let's try again. Go. Let me try just refreshing my screen because it's not going. Here we go.
After the angel's song, everyone held their breath as the darkness rushed back in upon those shepherd boys. Staring into the night, climbing up all in the hearts were trembling with fear and joy. Down from the hills, running like children, run wild with a song that made them young again. As the field beneath their feet turned into city streets, they were crying out, have you heard, have you heard, oh of the secrets of the
About in that song is how, you know, the message came to the shepherds, and he refers to the shepherds as the symbol of humility, right? The message, the inner intuition comes to those of us humble who are feeling for that subtle inner intuition instead of following that big inflated balloon of self-will. Also, I just want to say that when I selected today's message, it obviously was because I felt inspired to, and I think it was around Thursday when that occurred. And I wasn't aware of the gentle healing tip that would hit the daily update today. I wasn't thinking in that way. But when I woke up this morning and read the tip, I realized how perfectly it goes along with this message. So even if you've read it, you might go back and read today's tip again and notice how, you know, learning to follow this inner being, this inner spiritual intuition, this unknown, is learning how to allow doing to happen without a self, right? And this is an important part of what the spiritual path is all about. And with that said, I release the mic, everyone. Again, happy Christmas Eve, Merry Christmas, and deep, deep love.